really promotes even sort of like social arrangements.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe, but it does. And people, when everybody owes each other something or wants to get something out of somebody, it keeps them together and
works
together. And that's one of the things that's happening here, obviously. I mean, people who long ago should have left to other things are locked in this, like, ridiculous battle, over... You know, think about, I brought up the original Star Trek. I was an old Star Trek fan when I was a kid, and I loved the show, and it was on for only 3 years, and I wondered why a show that turned out to be so popular and made millions and billions of dollars over the years, and its initial incarnation only lasted 3 seasons. As a matter of fact, it was only going to last 2 seasons, and this is where showbiz comes into it. But the fans, there was a small group of fanatic fans, and they went to NBC, and they told NBC, don't take our show off. And NBC says, sorry, we're going to take it off. What are you guys? And they responded with a huge drive, just like, one person writing 1,000 letters type of thing, and totally inundated NBC. And NBC, but nobody was threatened, I'm sure, and nobody's children were threatened. And NBC actually relented and let the show continue, even though it was unprofitable for another year.
Yeah, well,
and we're like looking at the same kind of dynamic.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the poor listeners that are not sophisticated, if they get sucked into all of this, but the minute those people get on the air, it has to be a group. You can tell it look like some of the damn voices are from the same men and women.
Oh, it is.
Singing this mantra.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, oh, hell, here we go again.
And I used to always think, I was bamboozled, too. I thought it was about bringing people. Well, there's so many different factions involved. Who you're talking to depends on what faction they're with.
Yeah.
And what they really believe. But let me say this, that... there is Concerned Friends has demanded that people sign loyalty oaths. And many have signed these oaths or agreed to these oaths that specifically say that they will never back down from the ultimate demand of the absolute return of Valerie Van Isler and Bernard White. And that nobody can be part of their coalition who doesn't agree with that basic demand. But they have also instructed folks, whether directly or by understanding and acquiescence, to never raise that as a public issue.
Yeah. So the
listeners, who a lot of them were thought that Valerie Van Isler was horrible anti-union person.
Yeah. They really won't get the message.
Right.
But Michael Powell stay up there.
Well, pardon?
And he may turn around and whip everybody's ass. Oops. Excuse me. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, right. Oh, and the FCC.
Yes.
Right, exactly. Well, you have to be careful because it seems like believe me, a small group of people, fanatical people, are capable of causing enough chaos.
That's right.
That the government could say that
we had enough of you.
Exactly. We're going to take the license away. I know,
right.
And I don't think they care.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's at a point now. I mean, obviously, when you have a loyalty oath situation, people are saying my way or the highway, to paraphrase Clayton Riley.
And
then it creates a situation where they might wind up with the highway.
Yeah.
You
stay the course. I mean,
Yes, and don't worry, I'm actually, believe it or not, I mean, I just, am not, when I had those arguments with the folks at the beginning, it's because, I just don't want, I would allow them to speak, and I would give them more of a chance of speaking if they weren't so cowardly about it. If they didn't come around and try and, back into the issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
By starting out and saying one thing and then coming around to what they really believe later on.
Yeah.
If they were very clear and wanted to actually discuss the issues and the facts. But I know that the reason they don't want to really discuss the issues and the facts is because it's really a business negotiation.
Yeah.
About money and about value. And therefore, it's not really about finding the truth or anything like that.
No. Because they play these sophisticated games of demonizing.
Exactly.
The minute they attempt to call a well-known woman like Eutrice Hitler compared to...
Right.
I knew they were off kilter.
Right.
Definitely.
And so I guess I want to send the message to these folks that their extortionist tactics are they're playing with the wrong person.
Yeah, well, not
right from the beginning.
They don't fool everybody. They might fool a large group of listeners, But, well, certainly they don't fool me because I've been out here far too long.
And I'll say this because, you know, I've had my arguments. Clayton is a difficult man at times. But I love him, you know, because he's a smart man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had my ups and downs in dealing with him, as anyone who knows can say. At the same time, I'll tell you this. Nobody deserves to be lied about in that way.
No, but that's the only way they can get rid of him.
And they freaked, you know, and this is because, you know, the poor board, I'll tell you this, is flooded. You know, the thing is, what I tell folks, what I tell Bessie is take the number of letters that you get and divide it by the number of people who are sending them. And then tell the board that, hey, this is a small fraction.
Yeah.
But, you know, the board is scared.
Yeah, well.
They've had threats against them.
And, Paul, and this too shall pass away.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
You're on the radio.
Hello?
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
All right.
And Joni, how y'all doing?
All good. Right. How are you?
All right. People ain't got no sense of humor, man.
They don't give us a chance. Well, you know, they can't have a sense of humor on this issue. However anybody stands on it, I mean, obviously, it's come to the point where to express a sense of humor is to risk the possibility that someone might back down from the absolute demand of the return of Valerie and Bernard. And that's just never going to happen unless they totally take control of the whole board.
Well, you know what? You know, I feel like, you know, you got to handle the internal politics of the station because, you know, I'm not there. You know what I mean?
I've been here 20 years, and I've seen it all play out. And I don't want to, because a lot of people are my friends, and I just think they're wrong.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of wrong things and a lot of dangerous things in how they've done things over the years because they were operating out of self-interest for so long and thinking, how can we make it so that we will never get our shows canceled? How can we create a situation where Pacifica can never really exercise their role as the owner of the station?
Well, that's really impossible anyway.
And they've thrown all these barricades in the way of change happening, and it's like when you throw all those barricades, it's like when we were at Yellowstone National Park and the trees had all fallen because of the fires that went through that park, and they were blocking the rivers, and the rivers back up behind the fallen trees, and then eventually they just explode past the trees, and it becomes a flood, a roaring, tremendous flood. You know, that's what happened.
Well, you know, it's like this, man. You know, I love all them people that's gone. I mean, you know, they had good shows. All right, I ain't going front on that, but life got to go on.
A lot of them could still be here. I just don't understand why they created this my way or the highway trip.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I don't understand it. From the beginning, I've been scratching my head.
That's just a strategy. That's like
hoping that you will in the end win everything.
Yeah, that's like a strategy.
It's everything, you know, double or nothing on the, yeah.
That reminds me of like, you know, my studies. I'm, you know, studying the 60s. Like, you had them, the weather people back then.
Right, right.
And
they're
underground.
They were like, went off into their own thing, and they left the whole rest of the movement behind, you know. And, you know, to me, if it causes divisiveness between people, then it ain't the right deal. All right? You ain't doing the right thing. You're just doing something for yourself. Mm-hmm. You need to just admit that. But you know, I ain't called for that, man. Play some Billy Hicks. All right.
You
know, tell people to lighten up.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Thanks.
One more thing. Don't cut me off.
No, I ain't cutting you off, man. I'm not even near the button.
No, I'm just playing with you.
I wouldn't cut it. Just like, you know, I would let people talk if they weren't so damn disingenuous when they started out. I mean, I don't care hearing from people who want to intelligently discuss differences in point of view.
Well, I was trying to listen to some of that. You said the School of the Assassins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I missed a lot of that, but I wanted to ask you about the website. You still got it?
Yeah, pdr.autano.net.
I got a computer, Paul.
All right, try pdr.autono.net. Great.
pdr.autono.net. I tried. I couldn't get in.
Try again and maybe say, okay, very rarely, but, you know, and if Paul Guerin is listening right now, he can go maybe take a look and see if there's a problem.
I signed up for Lockmail too, Paul Guerin, and
yeah,
your PGP thing is like giving me headaches. I'm like, oh my
that's
God.
That's a tough one. It is. It can be tough because it the whole concept of I found it hard to at times just to get my brain around the concept of
encryption.
Encryption. Yeah, it's like understanding encryption and understanding the keys, like a public key and a private key, and how it is and what it is they're trying to achieve. I mean, it's really. And we're going to have to just break it down one day and try and make it simple enough for the average human being to understand.
Because I'm like public and private. What the hell is this talking about?
Well, you know, I downloaded I got the PGP Lite.
Right.
Which is the actual encryption program, and I still I practice making keys, but I still haven't really 100% figured out how to use it. I just need somebody to walk me through it.
Right. Well, I mean, I know you're going to have him on again. So
yeah, and we'll ask him these questions.
But www.pdr.autano.
You don't have to say no www. Just
PDR.
Just pdr.autano.net.
Right,
and then when you get there, don't forget to look at my events list.
If I can get in it, you know, don't use the www. Oh, don't use that.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
Just write PDR.
Some names, pdr.autano.net.
And your address.
Right.
I got
the older names that were done when the internet first started, or the World Wide Web started, need www, but more recent names don't need it.
All right, man. You know, in the words of Monroe, carry on.
Thank
you.
You know, you know, y'all all right, man.
Thanks.
Keep it up.
Bye.
All right, peace.
Bye-bye. I keep wanting to say good night, and I remember it's morning.
You're on the radio.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, let me turn my radio down.
Sure.
How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Yeah, you folks woke me up, Paul did, sort of ranting and raving
at
some of these callers. But... I've been getting I'm on the subscription list to, I guess, the Dissidents or whatever.
Free
the Free Pack.
Yeah, sure. I've been on that for a long time. Yeah, sure. I read
and,
that.
There seems to be like a lot of propaganda coming across.
You gotta be really careful. I mean, it's so bizarre. I mean, and, you know, I really feel bad about Dennis Bernstein, who's, at one time was a very good friend of mine and decided he doesn't want to be my friend anymore. And, you know, he's propagating a lot of this, and I really just want to understand exactly what it is that's going on out there. I have a friend of mine in California, and, you know, as much as I have a lot of contacts in California, Joni and I go there a lot, I have to say the provincialism in Northern California, that is so intense as to drive anybody from New York crazy. I mean, their idea of that they don't want to be part of a network. They don't want to be part of anything. Nobody owns their station but them. This is ours. Stay away from it. Keep your hands off. Is not helping the situation.
Well, another thing I would say, I mean...
They should be more reasonable.
Yeah.
They are part of a network with 5 stations, and it's not like California has separated from the rest of the U.S. yet.
Well, I've been listening to BAI for about 30 years, which is actually like a scary notion to me.
Mm-hmm.
And... I mean, and I've heard people, like, come and go. There was this, what was this guy, Leonard Lope, he used to be on.
Now he's on NYC, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, he has NYC's on every noon, Monday through Friday noon. He has a wonderful talk show on NYC.
And so what sort of baffled me is this, you know, this latest notion of, you know, people can't be, you know, they're never going to leave the air. It can't be put off the air. And then the notion that they can say and do anything and then not expect management to deal with them is, like, incredible because you can't do that anywhere else
in the real world. We all sit here, and I'm talking about all the employees who just, like, have been working here for years and they scratch their heads because they've seen it all. Well, one person who I won't embarrass by naming says who's been here for so many years is that the last group, I mean, BAI has always been led by leadership cliques. And that the last clique, the one that was just ousted, basically, or ousted themselves, I think, was there for 10 years, one of the longest. And they built up a larger, they had more time to build up a larger following of personal loyalties to them. And I know that they were spending a lot of time, I think an inordinate amount of time, using the airwaves to build up personal loyalties rather than loyalties to WBAI.
Oh, I would agree. I mean, listening to the old morning show, you know, there was sort of a lot of, you know, like Bernard would bring on like people and they'd have their little pitch and stuff like that. I mean, some of it was interesting, but actually some of it was obvious. It was like some monetary gain. And, you know, there's actually a couple of shows like that where people have like their little workshops and stuff. stuff like that that they promote and stuff like on the air, you know.
Right.
While they have their little, you know, their little program and stuff.
Right.
And it's like right on the fine line, you know, of being flat out commercialism.
Right. And it was approaching, it wasn't corrupt, but it was, you know, a lot of people, you know, like Jim Dingman, who might even be listening, for example, he likes to say, they were all corrupt. They were all thieves to the max. And I disagree with Jim on that. I think it was approaching corruption because it was getting out of control.
Well, I would say it was really pushing up against the edge.
They definitely were toying with real problems, and you know, the fact of the matter is that that's the reason why Lou Hill created the Pacifica National Board.
Mm-hmm.
40 years ago, and that's what's forgotten. The Pacifica National Board Pacifica started out as stations without a national board, and the national board was added later by Lou Hill, the originator of the idea, who was a total anarchist and pacifist and would like to have had it without any central control, but it was impossible to run these stations without some sort of ultimate central authority and responsibility for the actions of all these anarchists.
Oh yeah, well I agree, and
or the place would go bananas.
Well, you know, the most bizarre thing is this whole rallying behind Valerie Van Isler when, you know, prior to her being like fired, even though they tried to give her like another job, like people hated her. She was a union buster.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know,
I know.
She was the worst thing that ever happened. Now, you know, she's been resurrected, you know, as some kind of, like, you know.
Well, the first thing Utrice did, I have to say, and I don't know if I'll get in trouble for saying this, but one of the first things Utrice did when she got in was end all the quid pro quos in one shot. It was like Alexander the Great cutting the Gordian knot when they told him, well, whoever unties this knot will rule the world.
Right.
And nobody had ever untied it, so he took out his sword and cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Utrice cut the Gordian knot of quid pro quos and backdoor deals and back channel alleys of information and communications and all the little ways that people would make a few dollars here and there that were not illegal but a little shady considering how we have to work like dogs and beg people for money.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of that was going on. I mean,
Petty cash, the exploitation of the petty cash file, the exploitation of people's personal relationships with people who were responsible for certain things and who had knowingly weaknesses that could be exploited. And this kind of weird thing that happens in any situation that just got out of control.
Well, because there was no rules.
Exactly. I guess that's it. I mean, I'm learning a lot of this stuff. And, Pacifica was actually, guess what? They're somewhat complicit in the whole thing. They let it happen for years. And one of the things that Pacifica was most complicit in was like letting because it made it so much easier to raise money, allowing all five stations to act for many years as if they were independent institutions that were somehow owned by the listeners in their local areas.
Oh, right, yeah.
When that really wasn't the truth. And they allowed people to believe that because it made it easier to get money out of them.
Yeah, I mean, that was a propaganda ploy to
by Pacifica.
To raise money.
Exactly.
But another point that I wanted to make is that, I mean, I listened to Utrice Lead on Talkback. I mean, when she got like the 4 days for the spot,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that sort of like totally revolutionized like the whole program.
And that started. That was, you know. You know, people don't realize that a lot more people were actually removed from the air when that happened, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
A lot more people were removed than this time. And, you know, and not that many people have really removed. A lot of people could come back tomorrow, but they would have to just accept Utrice as their leader. They don't want to do that, and that's really the real reason why they left.
Well, here's the interesting thing about all of that. I mean, I spent a lot of time listening to a lot of the shows that Utrice Lee did, and to me, you know, she was she seemed like a very forthright and honest person, very smart, right? And so when this whole thing went down and then you start hearing all this propaganda, I was like, well, wait a minute, hold it. Now, how is this person going to, I mean, I've really never heard her.
Her first move was to end every one of those special deals.
But here's the thing.
Man, that got people more mad than anything.
But see, what I'm saying is that I never heard in anything that she said, I mean, she maintained a certain level of integrity. And so the question I asked myself when I heard all this propaganda is like, wait a minute, this just doesn't even fit.
Right.
I need to get some more information.
A lot of people said that to me. A lot of people have been saying that to me. They can't understand it. You chase lead. She's great. She's my hero. What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. It's like this doesn't line up, as opposed to some of the other people that have been let go. I mean, I've seen them on all sides of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen them get catty with callers with, you know, where the caller didn't even, you know, I've seen them, like, attack callers where the callers really didn't even provoke them. And so I'm saying, well, wait a minute, what's going on? And even some of my friends, you know, they've sort of fallen for the propaganda. You know, like,
you know,
a lot of that gets into this whole dynamic of, you know, women that are strong, that are powerful, or whatever. You know, some men are like, you know, they're afraid of that.
Big part of it. And, you know, everybody screams when you say that, but it is a big part of it.
Yeah.
It is it's such a huge part of it. You know, I have one friend who's an African American man who's a major writer, a former radio contributor, and we agree on a lot of things, but on this we disagree, and we've discussed it quite at length. And he makes it pretty clear to me that he's not happy with uppity, highfalutin Caribbean black women. He just doesn't like it.
Right, exactly.
It's an offense to him because he thinks the accent and the is snooty and blah blah blah, and he's saying all these things, and I'm saying, oh my god.
Well, yeah, the person is putting on airs.
Putting on airs. That's it. You know, if I was a white person were to say this, if I were to say this, it would be called racism.
Well, yeah.
But a black guy says it, and it's really sexism. I guess.
Well, it's sexism, and then it's that whole schism between American blacks and Caribbean blacks.
Yeah, in this case. And I don't think that's the main thing going on here, but that kind of attitude is like, you know, that's been brought up as one of the things going on, and I think it is, but it's not the main thing going on.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about the people that I know that have gone for the propaganda, I mean, you know, they're the kind of guys that really don't like women that are strong anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. I mean, that's more what this guy was, who I was talking to. I could tell he had an overall problem with strong women. And now, isn't there something? I mean, you know, I questioned a friend of mine, a psychological type person. Why is there so much misogyny in rap lyrics? You know, calling women the bitch, the B word, and all these kind of things.
Right.
And he said to me, this person, it was a woman actually, said to me, well, don't you know that because so many black families are raised by women, are single-parent households with the mother raising the children, and the mother plays the father's role and is very strict, and that black kids are raised in very strict environments compared to white kids, and that that they have a lot of a hidden hostility towards their mothers?
Well, see, I mean, I don't know about that because, I mean, I grew up in a single-parent household. I'm African-American. And my mother was like my hero.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So now my whole perception is going to be totally different from somebody that resented their mother.
Mm-hmm. Who told them, you have to come in, and or was like, because she had three wild boys, was quick to use the belt or something like that, you know?
Yeah, that whole rap thing or whatever.
Which I saw plenty of white parents like that too, but I'm saying in this case it could be because of the single parent thing they were saying. But you know, it's interesting that you have this. I'm trying to get to the bottom of why there's this hostility towards strong black women, even among black men, you know.
I mean, this is also part of the problem. I think that you know, even if Utrecht Lead had been a white woman, it would probably be the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's just, you know, sort of like a backlash against women in power anyway.
In general, right. And, she would, I don't think if she was, you know, there's a certain understanding that Utrecht has that comes from the fact that she's African-American. Or I say African-Caribbean, but American if you live here in America, I don't know.
Well, you know, the interest... You know,
there's an understanding of what's going on where she doesn't take crap. Nobody can, like, you know, push her and say, you know, oh, you're being discriminatory or something like that. You know, and she, like, sees right through it.
Well, that's true. Not only that, I mean, she's not afraid to call, you know, like a spade a spade.
Right.
You know, she's not afraid to say that, you know, certain people are operating with, like, white supremacist thinking.
Right.
And I think, you know, being...
Oh, man, she says that. That's
you know, being forthright with that, I think, you know, makes people, like, very uncomfortable.
Right. Exactly. And that's, yeah, I'm trying to get at this, because what it is about this woman that it's engendering this small group of people to be so fanatically insane.
Oh, because they're intimidated by her. I mean, it's plain and simple.
I mean, I was on a bus, and this woman got up and started getting to a crowded New York City school bus. She heard, a city bus. She overheard me talking to Monroe. She's sitting behind me. And she got up in this crowded bus and started denouncing me in the most vilest of terms on top of her lungs the entire bus, as if they were all people who knew what WBAI was and listened every day and, you know, were not worth being even addressed unless they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I've listened since 1962, and I say that you and Utrice Lead will go down. And it's this white woman, and she's like sort of like... dressed, she's an older woman, but she's dressed sort of like a hippie with tattoos and everything, and she's going on and on and on. I mean, like, giving a lecture
mm-hmm.
to the bus, standing up as if she was like an agitator, a political agitator on the street or something. And I just got, you know, my stop came up, and I got off the bus, and I left her, and I saw her still, like, chanting to the crowd as I left in the bus, you know? And they were all looking at her like she was, like, who's going to call the cops first, you know?
Yeah, I know, like she was insane.
Yeah.
Which she probably was.
Right. And, you know, and... this kind of thing is very common of the reaction I get from people, and it's frightening, you know. And I'm told, well, you know, if you're going to be on the radio and thousands of people are going to hear your voice, you got to expect to have, like, stalkers and groupies.
I would agree.
And, like, it's something that I'm just getting used to because, you know, I've always been more the news guy. I mean, I've had my show in the middle of the night, but I never really played it to a huge audience, just to the people who are interested. And now all of a sudden I'm on the morning show and on a lot more times, and I'm realizing, oh, my God, maybe I didn't want to be famous. There's some drawbacks to it.
Oh, well,
and
yeah.
And Tony's looking at me like an egomaniac saying, who doesn't want to be famous?
Well, not only that, I mean, you know, you've sort of now become, like, controversial now because
right.
you're taking a stand.
Right.
And so... you know, like it or not, you're going to be, you know, a friend and a foe.
To somebody.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there, and they're all, like, emotional about this, obviously.
Oh, they are scarily emotional about what's going on with
right.
the station.
You know, I talked to, you know, the people that they talk about, this is what's going to be repeated a million times on the Internet, but believe me, AFTRA took the actions they did because of the emotional content.
Oh yeah, they
decided, like, this is, it's, whatever they said, it wasn't so much that they backed down what they said first. They just said, we got to cool this out because somebody's going to get hurt. People are screaming like maniacs and they're going crazy about this.
Oh yeah, because these people have they've gotten together this group, you know, when you look at some of the email, it's like fanatical, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane the kind of stuff that they're even saying. And then the little flimsy bits of evidence, I mean, because I saw that email about Clayton Riley and supposedly what he did, and then the supposed transcript, but they didn't have all the information there.
Right. No, they didn't. And a matter of fact, AFTRA didn't have all the information. They were presented, you can imagine, like, they were presented with, like, a thousand things of last-minute information. And they're presented with this thing that happened 6 months ago, and in a most emotional way, like, you must act on this. And so they act on it, and then later on, only after they act on it, mostly just to calm down all the emotionalism, the AFTRA representative listens to the tape and says, that's not how they represented it. It didn't happen how it was represented to us.
Right.
That way. But they said anyway, which is unfortunate, it drives me nuts, is I want to see justice done, but they want to see peace. And as such, they've decided to let things cool down a little bit.
Well, yeah, because that group has got, like, they do have, like, a lot of momentum going, which is, that's another scary thought, too.
Well, you know, let's face it, a certain person has been raising money for Pacifica by going to every sort of A-list fundraiser on Earth, filled with movie stars, actors, TV stars, radio personalities, raising money for Pacifica. So this person does have personal, now, relationships with a lot of folks who are in a position to make life really miserable for their union.
Right.
And, you know, and it's unfortunate that this is being done on so little information, and it's also being done to really, and this is the controversial part that will get me in trouble, but I'll say it anyway, it's being done, in my opinion, to further business negotiations.
Well, that, you know, see, that's a very interesting thing. I mean, you know, this whole thing about, like, democracy now, and then their strategic move to not produce or even broadcast the show from the studio there, and then think that, you know, that you know, all the stations would pick up the feed, is sort of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they're trying to sort of like break out, create their own show, right?
And find somebody else to carry it?
And not only have the, you know, sell it to the Pacific stations, sell it to other stations as well. And I'll bet you this is what will happen, though, too. See, the whole idea really is to make the content more mainstream, you know, sort of soften it up a bit.
That's their, you think, the goal of Democracy Now?
Oh, yeah. Soften it up
a bit. What they will do, yeah.
And then sell it to, and then make it available to, like, a lot more people, so they can get the opportunity. See, the strategy is to get the opportunity to be able to slip in a little something every now, but take a little softer approach.
It could be. Because I know that there are negotiations going on to move the show Spoken to another network. I believe it's not even a radio network, a television network.
Oh yeah, I'm
a television network, and they believe me. Democracy Now! Brings the content, the personalities, and the money. They don't need money; they have the money.
And here's the thing: I mean,
all they need is the outlet.
Well, see, that kind of show could work on cable.
That's the idea.
Yeah, like on an HBO channel,
right?
Or, you know, I mean, that definitely,
that's the idea.
That can definitely work,
right?
You know, especially in this,
right,
you know, this day and age. I mean, that's.
But it's unfair to tie that into the internal politics of this station, and to, you know, to hold the station hostage.
Oh, I mean, that's unfair. But see, this is a business strategy now.
It is.
You know, that's what it's all about.
Because if the people you're negotiating with feel that you could go back to your original network if you didn't like the deal they were being offered, then that gives you a bargaining chip.
Well, not only that, I mean, what you're doing, though, also, is that I think the goal is to delineate the show from, you know, this sort of, you know, backward, chaotic,
mm-hmm,
you know, network.
I see what you're saying.
You see, and say,
well, that's interesting. That's an interesting viewpoint. I see. So that's why, because I was wondering about this, because I was wondering, why cause all the chaos? Why? What is the chaos? Why is all this insanity? What do you gain from that? Obviously, folks are calling. A few people are calling with knowledge of what's going on and what the goal is, and they're acting in a way in order to cause the greatest amount of chaos. And they seem to really revel in that. And I'm saying, what comes from that? And that's interesting that you would put it that way. What's there to be gained from it?
Well, yeah,
because it would make the program, Democracy Now!, for example, or any other, look like the sane people cutting themselves off from these maniacs.
Yeah. Well, see, they get the added benefit.
I see. Well, you know, there's a certain problem because of a certain way a certain president of the United States was interviewed on the air.
Mm-hmm.
That caused a very negative reaction in the commercial world, and it's come to my attention that a certain person who carried out such an interview wouldn't get a job in any media outside of something she could do herself east of the Mississippi for the next 100 years.
Yeah, but she's
because of that interview.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Now she's organized now a way to sort of like cover that up a little bit by this whole thing now, because now she's the victim.
Right.
And so, you know, she's got a lot of people behind her. She's, you know, they got Edward, what's his name? Edward Herman.
Right.
She
spent 10 years going to A-list fundraisers for Pacifica, filling up a little address book.
But here's the thing. Here's a guy, Edward S. Herman. Here's a guy that has written a number of books, and I have one of them, you know, sort of dealing with this whole media issue, you know, and how it's, you know, it's been corporatized, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, he's on board with the dissident.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, because you know, they create something. The thing is that, you know, there's a, you know, there's a, what one person I was telling, who lives in Washington, says about the Institute for Policy Studies, you know, a think tank in Washington that provides a lot of the ideas for the quote-unquote left. I wouldn't even call it the left in America. I don't think there is one, really. Is that, you know, you couldn't, an outsider couldn't get a job working for them, and unless they literally slept with somebody who already worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these folks are all, like, sort of associated with these sort of internecine leftist groups that absolutely nobody could get into.
Right.
Unless they literally were sleeping with somebody, you know, or who was already in the group.
Mm-hmm.
And that that this sort of incestuous behavior is being translated into this whole struggle of trying to keep the Pacifica network as the sole outlet for these, for this group of people,
right?
The so-called, you know, left in America, which it really isn't much of a left. It's more like a you know, self-proclaimed experts on all the issues that the left are interested in,
right?
And you know, and some of them are more progressive than others. And, you know, that's the point being is that obviously the Pacifica Network wasn't meant to be the personal outlet for the Institute for Policy Studies or a handful of other small groups.
Well, yeah, I think what's happened, though, is that as the network has grown, the stakes have gotten, like, a lot higher.
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, now when personnel are let go, you know, we... You know, there's like a whole lot more at stake.
Because it's going to change. It's not no longer going to be an outlet for the IPS or Z Magazine or Edward Herman or whatever. It's going to be something a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be speaking to large numbers of people in the future.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't want that. I mean, they want it to be like a station that's, you know, directed at a small enclave of people.
So that's how you keep ideological purity.
Well, yeah, right, exactly.
And but the ideology, what I guess the point I'm saying is not really a leftist ideology. It's a ideology of a small group of people who've made a career that nobody can break into from the outside of commenting on issues that are of particular interest to people of left-wing backgrounds.
Well, yeah, you know.
and therefore people say, well, they're left-wing, but they're not really left-wing. They just comment on issues that are important to left-wingers.
Well, actually, you know, When I look at it, I don't look at it as really as left wing. I look at it as issues that make sense that the rest of the media is not talking about.
Well, you know, the reason the left wing thing comes in is because often the opposition are described as the left wingers.
Right.
And I'm trying to demystify and deconstruct that. They're not really the left wingers.
Well, it's left wing. It's liberal. To me, it's like what makes sense because I mean.
Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about the dissident, the opposition to Pacifica, trying to make itself out to be the left wing against the corporate Pacifica.
Oh, right. Well, yeah.
A false dichotomy when you look at the groups that sort of support. You mentioned Edward Herman, Z Magazine, all these groups. These are not people who really are left wing.
Well, no.
They're commentators on issues that a lot of people who consider themselves liberal or left wing are interested in.
Well, exactly, yeah.
And as such, have become sort of heroes to these people in an unquestioning way. To the listeners, some listeners.
Well, that's only for now because, you know, they happen to, you know, support, you know, the right side.
Right, until they make have a decision that breaks. And, you know, the Middle East, I keep bringing it up, that's a real divisive issue. They get everybody, like, you know, blown apart. You know, all kinds of these coalitions that are based on self-interest could fall apart in a second.
Mm-hmm.
If the wrong war breaks out, then nobody can all agree on which side is right or wrong.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Like in the Middle East is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Where nobody really knows what side is right. There's so much division over what is the right or wrong side in the Middle East that if they ever have a war there, which they're about to have, I wonder what the so-called American left, how they'll handle it.
That will be interesting. Hey, let me try to get some sleep here, man.
Yeah, I'll let you go. It's very interesting. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
I liked your insights. It's very interesting. You're on the radio.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Oh, yes, hello.
I
wrote you a letter, Paul.
I got your letter.
Okay, you did.
Were you once a magazine proofreader?
Yes. Well, not magazine. I worked for Auerbach Publishers. Have you heard of them?
No, I haven't.
They publish technical books and articles, right. Real estate,
right.
Financial,
right. Right.
Computer, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I was an right. editorial assistant for 7 years.
Which
it shows, doesn't it?
Yeah, you did. You were very visible. I give you that.
Okay.
And I have your letter, and I actually read it, and I'll send a copy up to the publishers. You have to understand
the publisher. Of Heads.
And I have to say that our proofreader is a good person and a good friend of mine.
I have nothing against it, the proofreader.
And he did try to do as good a job as possible, but we're such a low budget operation. But by the time I get it to him, and then he gets it back to me, and I get it back up to them, it's chaotic.
Okay. What kind of a doctor is Francis Berry?
Probably a PhD, I'm not
sure. Is she a PhD?
Not a medical doctor. I never heard any reference that she was
right.
a medical doctor.
You think she's a PhD?
I think so, yeah.
Does she have experience in the broadcast area industry?
I don't think she did.
I don't think so either.
I didn't think she did. and I didn't think she did at the time. She made a lot of... She tried to run the place like you would. She left a bad taste in people's mouths. It's coming back to haunt us now. She left a lot. She was too... I can understand the logic behind appointing her. To a lot of people, she was a hero. Mm. Black woman who made it to a very high position.
Uh-huh. Is that an appointed position?
Yeah, appointed by the president. She was appointed by Carter.
Yeah.
She was appointed originally by Jimmy Carter, and then Reagan tried to get rid of her, but Congress wouldn't let him get rid of her.
Oh, so she's been doing this for many years.
Since Carter.
Wow, yeah,
that's
time.
When she was appointed.
Uh-huh.
And, so to a lot of people, and I've talked to people, I mean, they still wince. They think that that she was a good choice and people were unfair to her. However, she ran straight into California provincialism. And you got to be careful. I hang out in California, but their provincialism is legion. You don't mess around with something they consider a California institution and you don't come from California.
Right. Do you know Heather Woodbury?
No, I don't.
Oh, I thought you might have. She's a performance artist that's currently doing... She lives in California. It's why, mm-hmm. one of the reasons that... Pardon me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I went to see her tonight in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Oh.
And the first... it was hysterically funny for me because I'm very familiar with WBAI. And the opening several minutes of her monologue is all about WBAI. You know, she's like simulates without any, any specific indication of who it might be. It's
right.
just a talk show, and it doesn't say. It's sort of a takeoff on the title of your show. It's not referring to it. Let them talk more or something like that. it was very funny.
That's cute. But
yeah, it was cute.
Yeah.
No, that's what I thought you might have known of her because
I hope she's listening or somebody knows her. She'd give us a call. I'd love to hear her. She'd get us tickets or something to go see it.
As a matter of fact, I was looking for the flyer which I've had with me. I did some drawings of her, by the way, in the semi-darkness that I'm just mm-hmm. looking at while I was listening to some of these conversations.
Is this an ongoing performance? Or
she's going
night?
To be. Listen, here's a free performance. Hey, listeners would love
this.
I've
got it on my list.
Okay. It is going to be, and I'm sure you both know about this place. It is called Here.
Yeah.
Okay, on 6th Avenue mm-hmm. near Dominic and Varick, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And on September 12th, I think it is, she's going to be giving a free performance there at Here.
Say
that's
her
cute.
Name again, huh?
Heather Woodbury.
Oh, okay.
And that performance is free. You do have to call up. There is a phone number to call, to make a reservation, and then you leave your number, and they call you back, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, people might enjoy it. She's a Californian herself.
Do you have the number, or
looking for the flyer that I had. I can't find it.
Well,
anyhow, I know what. I'll send Paul a copy of the flyer, because
great.
I know I have it.
Great.
Okay, good night.
Thank
all
you.
All right, thanks
bye-bye.
For calling. All right, a free performance. That sounds really interesting.
Especially if it's about us. You're on the radio.
Good morning.
Hi.
My whole spin on this mm-hmm. whole BAL incident when it first occurred was I kind of believed the hype. I kind of believed everything that I was hearing on the radio about mm-hmm. how, like, evil certain people who had taken control of the station were. And, personally... The one thing about you, Teresa Lee, that I didn't like was when callers would call up and try to express themselves, and, granted, everybody's not as articulate as you, Teresa, she would try to correct their grammar. She would try to tell them exactly how they were supposed to talk.
Oh, right.
And that,
yeah.
And that really used to annoy me.
I can't speak for her, but I can say, for having been behind the mic for a long time, that, you know, ultimately what people don't realize is that ultimately I and Joni and during her show, Utrees, and doing Gary Knowles' show, Gary, and during, you know, any show that's on the air, the host ultimately is absolutely responsible for everything that goes on the air, and we don't screen calls.
Granted.
And as such, it's a constant battle with listeners, many of whom are very aggressive, many of whom are very smart, who might agree or disagree with the point of view of the host. It's a constant battle to try and assert and make sure that you keep control of that show. And there's got to be a point where you can't allow the talker, the listener who's calling, the caller, no matter how much we are dedicated to free speech and to the caller speaking as much as they want, the line that they cross is when they try and take over the show and be the host.
I see your point. Could you wait 10 seconds while I turn the radio off?
Go ahead.
I'm getting
you're listening to WBAI in New York. It's 5:45. We're waiting for sunrise. I used to say night shift, and now it's sunrise.
Let me tell you about the other side now, because I started getting like 10 emails a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, just short messages. You could have put them all in one email.
Right.
And I just, like I said, will you please stop spamming me?
Yeah.
Because it just got to be crazy. And right. And there are a lot of dysfunctional people that do listen to the radio on both sides. So my response was, ultimately, I stopped listening to BAI.
Dealing with all this fighting and arguing.
I just couldn't. Yeah. I stopped.
A lot of people did. A lot of people did.
Yeah.
They just stopped listening.
I'm coming back now because it seems to be like it's over.
It's getting it's getting down to a, you know, this is actually, believe it or not, I guess in 1977 when they had a big fight, was actually bigger than this, and it was worse, and it lasted longer, and the animosities were greater. Can you imagine what they went through? And it totally upset and almost destroyed the station throughout the whole 80s when, you know, Reagan was in power. BAI went to almost nothing of a listenership, and in a sense, the source of our problem is we're still trying to make up for that.
Well, I don't know what you can do to increase listenership when you have, like, Howard Stern and Opie and Anthony and all those guys, like, getting millions of listeners. I don't know what you can do, because what I used to listen to BAI for and what I still listen for is I listen for the news. I do listen for Democracy Now. I don't mind. I would love if it came on cable. I don't care who gets paid, as long as I get the information.
Right.
And also, a lot of the personalities were personalities, and I didn't mind that. You know, in fact, I think that was a plus, you know, that you could turn on a radio station and hear some of the people who are unfortunately no longer there. But there's still many people on the radio that I do like listening to. And, you know, you gotta realize that there were times where I just like turned the radio on BAI, and I heard such a variety of information and music and culture that I would just like never turn the radio off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would, like, listen to the radio for weeks and become educated.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to let somebody else get online.
All right, good.
Thanks for calling.
Jeez.
212-209-2950 if folks want to actually support this kind of radio and become a member. It's $50 to become a member. 212-209-2950.
Or 25 if you're on a limited income.
Right. We have $25 and $50 memberships here at WBAI, and it's 212-209-2950. I really have not been pursuing that this morning because I want to give folks a chance to talk. At the same time, you know, it would be great if someone out there who could, like, you know, make a $500 contribution to make up for all so all the time I had to spend taking calls. 212-209-2950 for that, but we'll take your calls anyway on the air. You're on the radio.
Hello?
You're on the air. Turn your radio down.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Joni.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, first of all, let me say, yesterday we did very well in the pleasure of the room. Volunteer room. We did very, very well.
Right on.
Great. And, by the way, Monroe called yesterday, and I didn't hang up on him. I just wanted to know that.
All right.
I had to take care of the business first, you know.
Yeah.
Like Shabazz would say, show me the money.
There you go. That's come
and
first.
That came first. I put him on hold. I told him to hold on, but he hung up.
Oh.
I like Monroe. You know, I like him. Now,
he loves BAI.
The we were getting the same calls in the volunteer room, you know. they're very hostile calls, you know. But there are other, regardless of what, they're still my family, you know. But the ones who are very hostile, you know, you know what I say to them, and I think it'll help. I like the way you handled this show this morning.
Thank you.
You handled it very, very well. But here's the thing that could, I think would help. Whenever they start with the BAI in hostility, just say goodbye. That's what I do in the volunteer room. Say goodbye. Okay?
There you go.
Have a nice morning.
Thank you very much. Say goodbye. And hopefully Clayton, warts and all, will be back to say goodbye. You're on the radio.
Hello. Hey, good morning, all.
Hi.
Oh, okay. Hi. A couple of quick takes, and this leads to your next stint at 7 a.m., I guess it is.
Yeah.
They had a hearing preliminary at the Kangaroo Court at The Hague, and, you know, that judge, whenever Milosevic wanted to speak, they pulled the plug on him. So I'm wondering, this judge must have the same DNA as Bill Weinberg. Now, here's why Jim Dingman is everything that Bill Weinberg has never proven himself to be. Jim Dingman, let me give you two examples of why he's a great talk show host and a great person, period. I remember when he was co-hosting Weaponry, which has really depreciated since he left for whatever personal reasons with him and Tom Wisker. He was doing a show on the Russian Civil War, and I called up, and dare I say, because I did this quite matter-of-factly, I corrected him on a few points. I didn't do it in a condescending way, but clearly I was...
Hello?
Yes, hi. That was my phone. I'm a little bit spazzed out with this line. But anyway, I corrected him. Now, did he take offense? Did he get paranoid? No. It whetted his appetite. He asked me follow-up questions. Oh, yeah, well, tell me something about the Ukrainian national movement as it degenerated over the years and decades. And he actually ended up interviewing me for 10, 15 minutes at the end.
As we've done in this show, maybe.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's good radio. He thanked me. And, you know, Utrice has done that, too. My best radio experiences were I had 2 half-hour calls each with Utrice, one-on-one. Mind you, this is commercial-free. And you know what? She challenged me. She gave me a workout. My brain was sweating. But that's what good radio's all about. And she's a bit of an ego because she probably said, I'm going to get the best of him. But you know what? I'm the same way, too. And we probably think in our own way we got the best of each other. But callers, you know, told me, you know, Mike, you know, you did good. You did good. And that's what good radio.
People enjoy that when people engage and really have a good
conversation. Yes,
but
when, like, that Italian fellow was on and we were going back and forth.
Yeah, he really enjoyed that, too.
That's good radio. And let me give you another example of Jim Dingman's fairness. During the Bosnian War, he had on a couple of Soros people, and I was the last caller. He let me get my shots in. And then at the end, he said, we have to summate now because the show's about over. And so I was still on the line. He let those two bozos go off, but then he said, now, caller, are you still there? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, since you are the minority view and too bad you called late, I want you to have the last word. That is a fair journalist. And these leftist kooks, okay, who are still around, you know, they have their own clique, like you said, and, you know, they pretend.
Well, I guess whether they're leftists or not is up for grabs, isn't it?
No, I think that in certain instances, I'll take them for what they say they are. But in terms of,
I guess you have no other choice but to do that. I guess when people do it, and it's unfortunate, but you know, I didn't think the Soviet Union after in the 1960s was truly a socialist country. I thought it was social imperialist. But you know, if they keep calling themselves socialists all the time, then you got to say, well, you know, whether I think they are or not, they're definitely representing a lot more than I am, so I guess I got to deal with it.
Right, but these guys, you know, dissidents and then those that are still, you know, around and whatnot, they are, you know, legends among themselves and the choice few that listen and support them. And the station will progress. I would say, you know, good riddance with them, and we can prosper because there is a lot of great talent out there, not to besmirch some of the people who've left the scene, but for example...
Smart people. I heard Jim Dingman, a matter of fact, say, what, smart people are a dime a dozen in New York City?
Okay. I remember when my man, John Fisk, a great anarchist, was purged from this station in the mid-late 80s.
We have to go. You know, it's, we have
okay.
to, because of the, I can't push it the way we used to
okay.
push it.
Amy and Bernard did not support John Fisk, so, you know, the shoe's on the other foot now.
Good point. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, take it.
All right, good night. I mean, good morning.
Good morning, yes. Well, I guess sunrise will be coming in a minute. It's 5:55 in the morning. That was a fast 3 hours.
Telling you.
All right, well, pdr.autano.net. You can contact us through the webpage.
And check out my events list, all free events in New York City.
Right, and also you can leave us a message at 212-209-2955. Here is my tribute to the opposition.
It's rolling. Okay. Don't judge me, I won't judge you.